This is an interview with James King for the Youngstown State University Project, Oral History of the North American Indian by Jay Toth at Strip Rock, New Mexico on September 7th, 1979 at 12:30 p.m. First thing I want to ask you is discuss your family past, your background.
What do you mean by that?
Let's start with your grandparents. Where they lived and what you remember of them.
On my mother's side,
Their names.
Yeah, my grandmother's name is Nellie Hetty Tom. And my grandfather's name was Jim Tom. He was called in Navajo, he was called I don't remember. But they call him Wolf's Penis. He got that name because I guess when he was younger, in his teenage year, he used to catch wolves that are some wild dogs and loose and catch them on horses, and he took them home and he castrated them and he collected the penis, and he did this as a hobby, you know, something to do. Where he is, it's desert there, and there's a trail between our mountain there, Lukajigi Mountain there, and the Sleeping Mountain there. There's a trail, and we'll use that trail. The deers use it, and some bears use that. And mostly wolves run right along through his land there, his stretch of land there. That's where he used to catch the wolves and castrate them. He got the name, castrating wolves. A lot of crazy names for older Indian people. They get their names from doing whatever they... Somebody sees them doing something. Sees them more than once doing something. That's where they get their name. I got my name from my grandfather also. I used to dress up in real warm clothes. I had this woolen pants and woolen shirt. Most of my clothes were made of woolen. I used to dress up in hot heat, summer sun. They said it's hard for me to. I mean, it's hard for them to take it off. I didn't want them to touch it. They gave me a name, woolen shirt. Used that for my painting. I signed Beidatlo on every one of my paintings. I don't sign my James King. Because there's a lot of Anglos named James King, yeah. Especially in Ohio. Yeah. And I don't really know my grandmother's. I don't really know her Navajo name, but she does a lot of rug weaving. She still does that. She's about maybe 80 years old. She did a lot of exercise, I guess it's what's keeping her going. In her younger days, she used to run and catch wild horses on foot. What you do every year. He usually starts to shoot the movie. She said he used to swim across the San Juan River with wet wool there, you know how wool is. That's how she says she keeps her fit for her fitness. They call her Hetty Tom. She's still living down the farm about 2 miles west of My father was a police. My grandfather was a police during the Barney and Clyde days, and he was one of the guys that set up the roadblocks somewhere out towards Table Mesa. They were watching out for them, so he did pester them. And he used to bootleg, and he used to make, when he was alive, he used to tell me a lot of this, so that's what I'm telling you. Used to say he made sunshine from corn and whatever kind of thing they could squeeze juice from. Maybe yucca plants. And you see them at squad dance. He got a car, the first panel car in on the reservation, a real big car. And it was one of our luxury, his luxury. He was a gunslinger and then he caught. And he started trading, buying soda pops from these traders, and then he sells them to these Indians at squad dances and sheep dips and wherever Indians get together. He would sell them there for much, double the price. He started doing good in trading and sort of settled down, started trading flowers and canned goods with other relatives and neighbors. So my grandmother says, she told me this, my grandfather did, about him trading. He never told me about the trading part. They said he was doing pretty good for her. Mighty Chor. If you mention that name there, they'll just start laughing.
Can you marry any stories that they told you?
My grandfather?
Or your grandma?
Most of the stories that I knew are told in the winter. I can't tell you this now, it's summer. But most of the good fireplace stories would be good. It's good. It's only told in the winter, the real dead cool winter, where you're sitting around the fire and it's only time it's told. And just jokes and stuff like that, I can tell you that. I don't really know much. I paint what I seen and what they told me. So most of this is not. It's right from. I got evidence to back up every painting that I have. About 50% of them are from my grandmother and grandfather.
Where did you go to school? High school, elementary school?
I went to Chabra High School, finished Chabra. I was here most of my life, except for about 4 years. I went to Rehoboth Mission and Gallup, some mission school. I guess my father put me there to keep me out of his hair. I learned a lot of things there. Some of them are still with me. It's a small town, 2 miles east of Gallup, New Mexico. It's not a town, it's a village, I guess.
Were your experiences good or bad? Or
there? There, right. Learned a lot of things. Mountain climbing. Teach a lot of things besides school. And after high school, I took off for. Well, during the high school, I couldn't decide what to do. Start going to the army or just be free for maybe 5 years or so and just carry on with my friends around here and try to be happy or go up to another university or college. Boy, I hated school then. By high school year, I didn't want anything to do with school. And right after graduation, the next day, the day after the graduation, three of my friends went and they got an accident, all of them died. It didn't bother me. During the fall there, during August or July, another one died, another my best friend, these are my best friend I'm talking about, died in another car accident. All of these were because of liquor, they were drinking. And I was with them. We used to go out and have a good time and booze up and all. We thought we had a good time. Then in September, another one, this was the best friend. He's like brother. He died in another accident because of beer. He was hauling beer, and one of his friends, they died again. Then I just couldn't take this anymore. You know, I couldn't hang around here. I don't have any friends, and like the booze ever, just have time, a good time. I didn't have any bills or no, I didn't have a girlfriend or anything like that, nothing to worry about. And then I started thinking seriously what I should do for it. I told myself I'm gonna get out of here, out of Sherbrooke, because I knew I'd be going again pretty soon. I really don't have anything to do around here. And that's when teachers that were telling me that I was good in art, that I had a talent in art, I started thinking about what they said, you know, when I drew my video. I thought about that for a while, and now and then, and it finally got to my head that I should go work on that, since that's supposed to be a talent and supposed to be me. And then I just said, I'll do it. And I go to an art school, went to BIA office, signed up, they tested me, and I was okay. Gave me a month to get ready, and they shipped me off to Salt Lake. And they gave me a choice between Chicago and Salt Lake and Los Angeles. And I had some friends that were living in Los Angeles also, and I didn't want to go there because I didn't want to get involved with the partying, drinking, we drop out. So Salt Lake was my choice because I didn't know anybody there, and the city was supposed to be a Mormon city, and not much crazy things are not supposed to be happening there, but that was a mistake. Took off of there and went to Utah Technical College on Redwood Road there in Salt Lake. Started off pretty good. We did real nice, started learning things pretty fast. And we had art shows on every semester, and I won ribbons. I won most of the ribbons in my class. I really liked what I was doing there. And I did that for 2 years. After 2 years, I graduated from there in commercial art department. And then I stayed there in Salt Lake. Stayed there in Salt Lake for about a half a year. I freelanced for people. I didn't work for anybody, just people that wanted somebody to sign or a mural painting or postcard, design a postcard, a little bit of illustration on the side. My wife was supporting me all through this time. I mean, I didn't have a wife when I was going to school, but after close to high school, close to Salt Lake Technical College, close to my graduating there, I met my wife, the girl who's my wife now. She became my wife right after graduation. I stayed there and she supported me. She worked at this manor. I couldn't make the ends meet there because of the rent and the food and the high cost of living in the city. And we struggled there for about 3 to 4 months. And we sort of got lonely for the 05 bread and the reservation, the range, and Mountain Stew. We just pulled our everything out there and we packed our boots away and came back down. And I couldn't find a job around here in my field, no commercial art. Farmington wasn't that big enough to, they send most of their art illustration jobs to do for certain magazines and stuff like that were sent up to Albuquerque, 290 miles southeast of here. So there wasn't any kind of commercial art agency in town. Maybe a few sign painters, maybe a few typesetters for a magazine or a newspaper, local newspaper. That's about it. So I just started painting, selling. Got into oils there, and acrylic, watercolor, and pencil, charcoal sketching. And I did this during commercial art, but they were mostly set to meet. You have to come up with an illustration or a sketch in a certain time. I say they give you about half a day or maybe 30 minutes, maybe 5 minutes to come with a good sketch for a certain illustration in, let's say, fashion magazine. I mean, the fashion newspaper where they're advertising their clothes. And I just sort of worked on it more, put in more details, and sort of got the experience in art from that and switched it over to my fine art, I guess, called Lemon Art. Started selling them and sold them at $100. Started selling the first one at about $15, went up to $100. And people start coming over and say, paint me, paint my jewelry, paint my baby's photograph there. And I did them mostly for practice. I didn't have anything else to do besides just sitting home taking care of our girl there, a kid by then. This was in 75, I think. 1974, 75. My wife was the only one working again. She was working at the hospital. And I was a freeloader. I guess to stand and try to paint, try to get something. And I did this, and finally I got a job in a plant here, Fairchild Plant, what they call it. They had people from Mountain View, California ran that. They ran, I guess, until the war ended. They didn't need no components for those missile heads and stuff like that. They were doing dyes and memories for computers. And a lot of Indians are working there, about 80%, I guess, 80 or 90. It's that big old plant you see across there, it's empty now. And in 75, that plant was doing pretty good, and it started going down. And some, the whole shift, I think it was, I'm not sure, but the whole shift was laid off. And you couldn't find a good job around here. You couldn't find, there's not enough job here in the reservation. The shift was laid off, and the AIM people heard about this, people from the American Indian Movement, or somebody told them. And one morning we woke up with Fairchild clothes and AIM flag right in front of me. American flag upside down. My father and mother were both working. And then people started wondering why. They just started asking questions. And I guess it's because the Indians were laid off. And they stayed, they held that plant there for about 4 days, I think. You could see the guys up there with the guns. And I guess you've seen pictures of that. And the plant people, the guys, the heads of that Fairchild plant turn around and they blame the AIM for shutting down the plant. They don't say that the plant was going down because there's not any more components. There's no more demand for them. They didn't tell the story right, I think. They should have said. Instead, it was, the whole thing was blamed on American Indian Movement.
You're a supporter of AIM.
At that time, right now, I'm not really, just a little bit.
And the
just maybe 5%, I guess, I really went down because of what they did, unless they did wrong. I don't know. I can't really blame them. Maybe the CIA or FBI, somebody started screwing them up. They have all kind of setups to put certain group down. Let's see, any group. And the group that's gone down, they get the blame. And it's hard to explain it if you dare and if you saw the news media, they turn around and they seem that you're at fault. And I knew the thing that went on Wounded Knee is not how it is, because I heard recordings and the actual communication with the federal agency there and with them. When you read in the newspaper, it's a whole different story. This is how it was, I think, with Fairchild. And that happened, and after that, Fairchild shut down. It's still shut down. There's nothing but tumbleweeds over it. And I couldn't go back to work there. So started painting again. I painted my country reservation. I painted what the Anglo would want me to paint. They said, the trader that I sells my, that buys my work says, put a sheep in there, put a horse in there, put a sunset in there. I guess that's what sells the most. So I started doing this. I've seen those, but those were dull, and I've seen all the time. So then I started painting still life. I put stories into my still life. I put flags in there, rugs, potteries, paintings, and all the rattles, a little bit of maybe a peyote button to represent the peyote church. Came up with a good story quite a few times.
I don't know what I'm thinking about. You come to Youngstown, where I live.
Yeah.
There's a Butler Museum. It has the largest collection of Indian art in the United States. You could possibly put on a show there.
Are you familiar with Indian art paintings and stuff like that?
No, yeah.
So I think a buyer should be, I think a buyer should be able, they should understand in the art before they buy it, to have them, they should enjoy it more. I think they will if they do, understand what's in the story. Not because it's pretty or it's different. And then I started painting. I did that paint, babysit and paint. This was in 75, and then 76, 78. I started working for this one, coming up in Farmington there, or industrial. Another whole tribe around that in India. I became a mechanic, and I switched over to soil technician. I was in the technical side of soil, measuring moisture in the soil. They're using neutron proof and stuff like that. Sort of getting a little technical. And I really liked it. I learned things every day. Besides driving the tractor. Yeah. During 1977, during the spring there, I really liked what I was doing there. And I was painting there on the side at home. And I heard in the I read in the newspaper that there's a Western artist coming into Farmington. He's supposed to be real good. He's supposed to be the best one in the world. And I was familiar with Western artists. They were supposed to be the best artists in the United States. And just their work were high quality stuff. This guy was one of them. So my wife and I, we said, let's pack up, let's get... I had a painting finished then, sitting there on the easel ready to sell. I don't know to who, but just sitting there. And I said, let's get that painting down there and see what it says about it. So we got it down there, and he was down there at this one place in Farmington, the small art store. Took the painting in there, and I introduced myself. I was a struggling artist, not knowing nothing, anything about the art world. And he saw the painting and just studied real good. And said, now, if that painting was in the I think it was Ellensburg in Washington. If that thing, that painting was in there during the art show, the Western art show there, I would have given it the best of show. That's the highest award there. It's supposed to be the best show in Western art up there in Washington. And it started getting knocked my head around. he said, no kidding. I'm not doing this because of you. This is a snake rattle here. Well, good luck. You hear it every once in a while. Well, he said, I'll give you the best of, if that pen was there, I could have given you the best of show, because he was a judge there, him and some other guys, but he was the boss. He was the major guy that judged the painting.
What was the name of the painting?
Painting that I had done?
Yeah.
That one was a still life. I don't know if I had the name or not.
You sold it?
I sold it, yeah. I was sitting there and then everything, you know, that was really happy. None of that I felt it walking on thin air, you know. I felt big for a while. And they're just sitting there talking. I guess some art collectors were there, and one of the collectors happened to be a tanner. Tanners are well known around here on the reservation for real fine, high quality Indian art. Excuse me. Where was I at now?
You're talking about a tanner?
Oh, tanners are the best known art dealers. They handle fine work on reservation, real high quality stuff. They one of them happened to be there and he wanted to talk to me afterwards because no, they haven't heard about me or anywhere else. And I haven't been in any art shows or fairs or I haven't been in any galleries. I guess my work was pretty good for them. And they said, one of that guy said, come to my house. Gave me where he lived, his phone number. And I went up there that Sunday. We talked on the art world and that my stuff was real high quality. And they'd be willing to handle me. Yeah. We were talking. And he sort of said something about me going under a contract for 5 years, just paint for him, and he'll pay me about $500 a month. No, that was good money then. $500, that's how much I used to make a month. No, I could do it in a week, 2 weeks. He offered me $1,000 a month. That's what I said. What, did I say 500?
You said 500.
A month? Yeah. $500 every 2 weeks, so that's $1,000 a month. He said $1,000 every month, I'll give you $1,000. I'm used to making $500. I just fell for it. I failed. It's a lot of money. So we set it up to where I would come up with a painting, and all he had to do is painting every 2 weeks, no matter if I have a painting or not. We did that for about a whole year, almost a year. And during that time, I was painting for him. I went through the feeling of having to be forced to paint for somebody, and I wasn't used to this. I just painted whenever I feel like it, and what I want to paint, what I want to do. I'd like to forget to keep away from my easy for at least a week. Sometimes I just be out there running or doing anything, loading stuff. And I just lost the feeling, started losing the feeling for my work there. The quality started going down. And it was because of the feeling that I was forced to paint, come up with a painting, try to come up with a painting costing at least $1,500 every month. See? And it's a major painting by during that time. in 77. And in 78 there, I just quit. I said, I can't do it anymore. And he understood. He said, I'm going to lose money also. Because the quality is going down, I think we should stop. So he was pretty good about this, and we just stopped there. And another guy, called him Joe Tanner, he came along. He owned a gallery. That was his brother. Bob Tanner's the first guy. Joe Tanner was the guy that came along. Right after the contract was, you know, we said, there's nothing more here. Then I told myself, I'm going to paint for me only. Try to somehow get some money from there. By that time, I didn't want to go back to work because during when I was under contract, him and I used to travel out to Scottsdale and different shows, and I saw the prices on each of the paintings that were in much poorer quality than mine, and they were selling. And I thought, I can't go back to NEPI. I'll just continue working for myself without a contract. So I got out of that and came out with a good painting. One painting I thought was good. Tanner saw it. He fell for it. He said, that's the best painting in my life. Because the feeling was there. I wasn't forced to paint it. And that painting won the best of show at the New Mexico State Fair. And it made the Arizona Highway September issue of 1978. And that was because of the feeling that I was free and I wasn't forced to paint it in a month or in 2 days or something. And from then on, I just painted. Joe said, I'll handle your work. I'll be your art agent. I'll advertise your work in the newspaper magazine. I'll get it through galleries and I'll have it framed. So we started doing that and it came out pretty good. And my work started selling, started going up again. And right now I don't have any major paintings in the gallery because they're all so just smaller. Some smallers are still around, smaller size. But that's my story there. I'm right at 1979.
That one with the little girl, I really like that.
The one in there?
Outstanding.
She's gonna do something for you. For me. For us. She's a next door neighbor's girl, call her Sissy.
So what do you see in the future for yourself?
I wanna do what I do best, what I like best. I consider it playing, you know how playing is? Go out, you know, hobby, you know, working on cars, you feel different than work, you don't feel, of course, that's how it is. I go into my art studio and just get carried away. Sometimes I paint till morning. Start painting at 7 in the evening and then stay there till 8 the next day. Until my back starts hurting. And I don't paint sometimes at all for a month. I didn't paint the whole month of June and July. I didn't touch a piece. I just went fishing, camping, went to Apple Creek quite a few times, and just had a good time out there. And I just stayed away. And then after I came back, I did a good painting that I think is going to win the best of show, and there's the Apple Creek history for 1979. Anyway, the critics are. The people down there said, I think you won the business show already. I'm not sure, but so that'll be 2 years in a row. That was after the 2 months that I came back bouncing. I think the future's gonna be bright. I don't like, naturally if you're successful in making money, people naturally can put you and they, let's see, they fence you off as a celebrity or people, as a rich guy. I really hate that. I want to be just how I am today. Like, anything, and I just keep away from getting any kind of setting a standard for us. So.
You're very close to your parents. You were saying that you got a chance or have a chance to go to Switzerland?
Yeah, I have a chance to go to Switzerland with my parents in September.
You want your parents to go?
I want them to go before they go, because I know I'll probably travel to Switzerland or Europe again in my life, and my parents really don't have that much chance. They're old. And I want them to see, since their eyes are still good, I want them to touch a Swiss girl. Maybe see the tower, some that they saw only on television or newspaper or magazine. This would be some great for me. And I wish I hope it's gonna happen.
We're talking off the beat there, but your father and your mother makes rugs, right?
Yeah, she's a weaver. She's a weaver of rugs, different styles and patterns. The best she does is the Tigre Hill rug that brings her more money. She's not after money, she's just into to do something that brings the most money for her. You seen one of her rugs there?
I haven't seen one completely.
Just one in the room? The big one? Okay.
And your father was a former medicine man?
Yeah, he was a medicine man, and he did sand paintings, soul sand paintings on the side too. Sand painting was his second object, so he made money from that. Then started bugging him, so he went into silver. He was a silversmith, and then the smell from the gas there started getting to his lungs there. He quit that. He was doing pretty good silver. Made a lot of contra belts and bracelets. Doing good designs.
I really like your dad. Your dad's a very pleasant person.
Yeah, he's just soft and quiet. Then he went back into his sand painting for a while, then he just couldn't pull it anymore because of his problem there. That'd be that better.
What do you see for the future of the Navajo people?
I think Navajo people, right now, people come from the east and the west and everywhere else, and they say, oh, this is a beautiful country, look at that Indian. They don't really see the hardships that they don't see us really struggling. Our reservation is sitting there, and all around us things are going, they call it progress, and we're sitting here. And we don't like, I really don't care for progress myself. It's gonna backfire one of these days. Already we have pollution and stuff like that. See, we don't really have that problem. It's getting there. Some plants are giving us a lot of pollution.
I see you have one right not too far down.
Yeah, coal mine. But it could have been worse, I think. If our chairman wasn't.
So you're pretty satisfied with McDonald's and Peter McDonald?
Maybe 60%. Other, I can't really say fully that I agree with you.
As I was wanting to get into earlier was using the example as far as knowing that the Navajo people have like half the coal in the United States under their reservation. There's a chance they might get screwed up. To use an example was the Allegheny Reservation. Pittsburgh wanted to build a dam. Half the reservation was get covered with water. They lost out to the Anglos in Pittsburgh, and there's a chance that could possibly happen to the Navajos. But as I were talking about, the Navajos are the leaders of all.
They look up to the Navajos.
What do you think will happen when it gets to be a crisis where the country outside your boundaries don't want what you have?
I think, see, the government has been doing this all along. They're going to come in with fancy words and promises, and I think we're not going to get the deal we're looking for. Something's going to happen that we're going to lose out again. Hopefully not. I hope we're weak enough to see this. I think we should consider ourselves an American, yes, but we should be able to support ourselves here. And doing that, we naturally have to sell out to the other people. I respect the American flag, you know. I have one in the van there. Do you see that?
No.
It's not upside down either. I think the tribe is gonna get screwed. I hope not. McDonald says it won't happen.
Well, you have a couple hundred years experience.
400 years.
Yeah. Well, at least for now.
Yeah. People, the good school to learn how to talk good. People, they sound real good. They twist words a little bit and put things in there. And that's what naturally anybody falls for. This might happen. I fell for that one time. This guy will say, do me a painting, a big painting. I'll give you $600. And I can sell that for about $4,000. I said, they were just talking there. All of a sudden, I said, okay, $2,000. Then I backed out afterwards. I said, I couldn't do it. I don't know what happened to me. But that guy was good with words. He's a traitor. That's a true story, dude. But the Navajos are going towards progress there, and you hear the song in the background. That's a song out of New York or Los Angeles somewhere. And most of the people around are in blue jeans, Wranglers, it's up with the times. And now all the Indian songs are, you know, the old powwow songs and the old 49ers. They're throwing in the Anglo wording. Hey, my 49 or my 57 Chevy, stuff like that. It's getting to where the English word is getting there. I guess more people understand that. And a lot of things are going that way. It's maybe, I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. My belief, this is off the record. I feel that you need to keep your identity. You need to progress some to maintain your strength. You know?
Yeah, that's what I agree with. Progress enough to support ourselves.
I was just up to the extended care facility up there. I run nursing homes, okay, so that's where my expertise is. And I was going to go up and give them some advice, because what they're using is a lot of federal money to run the place. I wanted to take the person aside and say, look, things should be able to run them by itself, on its own. So on the outside, people look at Indian projects as though that Indians can't do things on their own. They need
federal assistance.
I go, you should use this as an example and run the thing just as if it was a nursing home outside the reservation. And you can have a very good one.
Yeah.
They're getting $46 a day. And I'm getting $31 a day. And my facility is running better and on its own, making a profit, and they're not. So it's a matter of putting the right people in the right places, the right know-how.
Yeah, that's really true. A lot of favoritism ruins the whole.
Now they want to get how much money is $250,000 in extra money to run that facility. I said you can get it out of yourself out of the building. You should not be asking nobody for it. Got the facility now operating. I gave a few pointers what to do. You know, they said they had a lot of change in administrators and stuff.
Yeah.
I said, no, I sent you a letter and said, I'd be coming out, and if you needed help, you know, I could help you. They never sent nothing back. That's what I find. I mean, you need to be self-supporting. You can tell everybody else.
Yeah.
Up your nose there.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to. Been doing that for 2 years now. I haven't really forced me anything to do anything or paint anything. So far it's been really good. It's going up slowly and truly.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have anything you
want to
help?
I wish you all luck, Doctor. You know, one thing that I really look forward to is technology there. See, right now we're using a satellite up in space. We're working with NASA to try to get our topography and land, how to set up our land here. But one of these days, I guess we'll like to be able to shoot up there and maybe a space shuttle and look at the Earth from up there down. Maybe I'll change my views on something.
You ever been up on? You've been up in time.
Just once. They touched my first ocean about 2 years ago. At our show. People didn't believe I never seen the ocean. So I walked down there, a whole bunch of these collectors sort of made a formal thing out of it. Touch the ocean. See my wife. Well, I like to see space, Earth from space. Something I'm looking for. Oh!